especially England and France, were against the slave trade very strongly. They'd abolished slavery, both of them, England and France. The British Navy, the Royal Navy, tried to stop the slave trade. These men in Montgomery knew that if they sought to reopen the slave trade, it would send a very radical message, not only abroad, but to the states of the Upper South, and they did not want to do that. So in all, I think we have a very moderate group at work in Montgomery, Alabama. Let's move on to the question of whether they represented, these moderates in Montgomery, or generally moderate men, represented accurately their constituencies in the Deep South states. Are these men indicative of what's going on in the Deep South? The process had gone so quickly from the first calling of secession conventions to the meeting of the convention in Montgomery, Alabama, that it sometimes seems that there must have been near unanimity in the Deep South states on the issue of secession. Let's get out now. We all agree on this. That's sort of the portrait that emerges of the Deep South. The whole process had taken considerably less than 4 months from when South Carolina voted to leave the Union until there's a Confederate government in place. Now that's less time than it took, as I said earlier, the Philadelphia Convention to draft our Constitution. But I don't think we should be confused by that apparent swiftness. There was a range of opinion in the South, in the slaveholding South, and even in the Deep South as to what the best course of action had should be in response to the Republican victory. And for our purposes, I think we can break opinion down into three broad camps in the slaveholding South. The first camp would be the immediate secessionists, those who wanted individual action by each state now. Each state should decide and either go or not go. That was their attitude. Let the chips fall where they will. Breckinridge backers were very prominent in this group. A second group we'll call cooperationists at the time. They favored waiting until the South could act as a whole, act in union with one another. In other words, correspond with each other, try to decide what the best policy would be, and then do something as a group rather than just going off one state at a time. Many of the upland counties with fewer slaves, some Bell and Douglas supporters, would fall into the cooperationist camp. Alexander H. Stephens was a cooperationist during the debates over secession. A third group would be called the unconditional unionists. And these are people who oppose secession, period. They believed that the South had a better chance of achieving what it wanted by staying in the Union. After all, the Constitution still protected slavery. Slave property had always been safe within the United States. These unionists said we should stay in the United States and try to do the best we can there. Now, these men were strongest in the Upper South and the border states, although there were some of them, witness Sam Houston, who were in the Deep South states as well. So the immediate secessionists, the cooperationists, and the unionists. Now, outside of South Carolina, where secessionists were a very large majority, about 40% of the Lower South was made up of cooperationists. It's a significant chunk of that population. But many Northerners tended to confuse cooperationists with unionists, and Abraham Lincoln was one of those in the North who did that. They tended to think that cooperationists were not in favor of secession, just as unionists weren't. But in fact, cooperationists were generally in favor of secession, but in favor of united action on secession rather than the action of individual states. So it's a misreading of Southern opinion on the part of many Northerners. Many Northerners, including Lincoln, counted on a backlash against secessionists. They thought this great unionist majority in the South would assert itself and push aside the secessionist leaders and bring the Southern states back to their senses, so to speak. It was an incorrect expectation on the part of Lincoln and many other observers in the North, because cooperationists would have demanded things that the Republican Party could not accept. They would have demanded a federal slave code for the territories or some guarantee of slavery in the territories, and the Republicans could not do that. It had been too important to their being elected. By mid-January 1861, Republican leaders had made it very clear that they were not going to make any concession on the question of slavery in the territories. And in fact, they said, we're not going to make any other concessions, period. The South, the white South, has been placated too long, the slaveholding South, and we are not going to make any more efforts to placate the white South.